society, according to Obai Al-Aboudi, director of Bison Center for Research and Development, one of the targeted groups. When the Zionist regime moves to starve Palestinian groups of the funding necessary to carry out their international advocacy work, its powerful international friends have sought to undermine accountability at The Hague. Their toothless statesmen of concern over the terror group designations must be understood in the context of their willingness to help the Zionist regime evade justice. It took Canada a week to acknowledge the Zionist regime's attack on the Palestinian groups while stating no position against it. In true settler state solidarity with the Zionist regime, Canada made thinly veiled threats to withdraw funding in a letter to the court stating its opposition to an ICC investigation in the West Bank and Gaza last year. Canada also paved the way for the siege on Gaza, now in its 15th year, by boycotting the elected Hamas government and cutting aid to the Palestinian Authority, citing the group's refusal to recognize the fake regime of Israel and give up Palestinians' right to armed resistance. Ottawa restored funding to the PA a year and a half later after the Western-backed Fatah Party, led by Mahmoud Abbas, seized control of the West Bank, leaving Gaza isolated and forsaken. In Washington, the Biden administration has voiced no protest against the terror group designations. The only government-level pushback has been a draft resolution signed on by a handful of House representatives. The draft resolution upholds the courageous work being done by the six Palestinian civil society organizations defending the human rights of a vulnerable and at-risk Palestinian population living under Israeli regime military occupation. But many more members of Congress on both sides of the political aisle signed on to a letter drafted by the Zionist regime lobby giant AIPAC, supporting the Trump administration's efforts to sabotage the International Criminal Court's probes into war crimes in Palestine and Afghanistan. These efforts included placing economic sanctions on Fatou Bensouda, the former chief prosecutor whose term ended in June, placing her in the company of international terrorists and drug traffickers. Though it has lifted the sanctions, the Biden administration has quietly attempted to pressure the Palestinian Authority into dropping the case at the International Criminal Court. Yet another green light to the Zionist regime to continue to build settlements in violation of international law and kill scores of Palestinians with U.S. weapons without consequence. The eagerness of the EU and UN bodies to defer to the Israeli regime is further indication that Palestinian human rights workers will be thrown to the wolves. The Zionist regime informed the EU embassy in Tel Aviv in advance of its intentions to designate Palestinian rights groups as terrorist organizations. The EU failed to relay this information to member states, some of which have pushed back against the Israeli regime's move. EU spokesperson Peter Stano told the electronic Intifada that we will be engaging Israeli authorities for more information regarding the basis for these designations. It is a statement of total deference to what human rights groups based in occupied territories have called an act of cowardice characteristic of repressive authoritarian regimes.
If you ask me, why do I stand here? So unafraid of everything around me, proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away, proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day, when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jalad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We are going to talk about the rules related to prayer according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Sheikh Javed, we are talking about the rules about prayer according to Ayatollah Khamenei, and let me ask you this question. If, you know, you're wearing a coat or a drop of, and a drop of blood falls on it, okay?
Yeah.
And the blood spreads into the lining of the coat.
Yes.
Well, is it considered one space or two spaces stained with blood? If it is considered one space, then it is not bigger than one dirham, okay?
Yeah.
And if it is considered two spaces, then it is bigger than the size of a dirham. How should one go about it and offer the prayer?
Yeah, that's a very good question because, you know, most of the coats or clothes we wear have, you know, a lining.
Yes.
And Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that if the blood reaches the lining, then that is a separate thing. And the blood on the lining should be considered separately, and therefore if those two drops, if those two parts, stained parts, are considered as one, or put together, and if the total amount, the space is covered by the two, by the coat and the lining, is lesser than the size of a dirham, then you can pray with it. Otherwise, if both of them make a bigger part or a bigger space, or a space bigger than the size of a dirham, then of course you cannot pray with that blood, and you have to wash it.
Sheikh Javed, one of the conditions in you said that must be or should be fulfilled when praying or saying the prayer was that the material or the fabric of the clothes that you're wearing should come from halal sources, all right?
Yeah.
And it should not be usurped, for example.
Yeah.
Because it's haram, in fact, to wear that. And so obviously you said that the kind of prayer that is offered in that usurped type of dress will be invalid, right?
Yeah.
But what if the person doesn't know that, you know, wearing such a dress or usurped dress is haram and it renders the prayer invalid?
You know, a person who does not know is not under any obligation. He can continue doing his responsibility and his duty
mm-hmm.
of praying, and his prayer is valid because he's not to blame. Ignorance is a bliss sometimes. You know, when you are not aware, when you do not know. You are not held responsible for not knowing, and when you know, you have to take action. Otherwise, your prayer is considered to be valid.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same case, in the example that you gave, a person does not know that his clothes is usurped, for example,
yes.
And he prays with it, and later on he understands or he comes to know that the cloth he was wearing was kind of, you know, usurped. In that case, his prayer is valid, of course, and there's no problem in the prayer that he offers.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay. Well, what about a part of this dress comes from that usurped, for example, source, such as a button or two?
Yeah, that's also a good question. Mm-hmm. You know, the buttons or maybe the thread. You know,
yes,
the thread. Used in the cloth.
Yes.
Grand Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that if the thread or the buttons are usurped, again the prayer is going to be invalid.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot wear a shirt whose buttons are usurped or whose thread has been illicitly obtained from some sources, from somewhere. And, of course, the prayer will be affected according to His Eminence.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, let's take a short break, Sheikh Javed, and we'll be back with more questions. Stay with us.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Law on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our dear beloved guest speaker here in the studio with us, talking about the rules about prayer according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, one of the conditions you mentioned earlier about the clothes, all right?
Yeah.
Or one of the conditions that must be fulfilled about the clothes of a person performing prayers should not be, in fact, made up of a part of the animal, which are specific, all right?
Yeah.
So what animals do you mean, or do the religious authorities, in fact, refer to when they say, for example, the parts of those clothes should not come from those animals, first of all right?
Yeah.
And how do we know which parts of those animals are najis or which part are not?
Well, the animals, whether they are halal or haram,
mm-hmm.
If they are not slaughtered according to Islamic law, then they are going to be najis. And you cannot pray with any parts of those animals, with the skin or with the bones or any part of the animal, the carcass or the dead body of an animal that has not been slaughtered according to Islamic law. And when it comes to haram animal, of course you cannot pray with any parts, even including the hair and the nails or any other parts of the animal. All of that animal is najis, and you cannot wear a cloth or a garment with the hair of those animals or that animal on your cloth.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to halal animal like a sheep or a goat or a cow, okay, if it's not slaughtered according to Islamic law, its hair is pure. You can pray with that hair, but you cannot pray with the skin or the hide of that animal because it was not made pure. It was not slaughtered according to Islamic law.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. What is Ayatollah Khamenei's position in regards to the parts of the animal which does not have a gushing blood? Is it permissible, Sheikh Javi, to wear a dress with the hide of such animals?
Well, animals... That's a very good question, because we need to differentiate between animals that have gushing blood and animals that do not have gushing blood, you know. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the animals that have gushing blood, of course, we have already explained the rules regarding gushing animals, such animals. These animals, the blood of these animals and the urine and every part of these animals, if they are not slaughtered according to Islamic law or are impure. But when it comes to animals that do not have gushing blood, like for example a fish, okay, if a dead fish is found on the seashore,
mm-hmm.
and you touch it, it's not najis. It doesn't have gushing blood.
Mm-hmm.
And if, for example, a part of that fish is found in your clothes or on your dress and you pray with it, it's not going to affect your prayer. Now the fish is just an example. You can generalize it, give the example of insects, you can give the examples of some species that do not have gushing blood. If a part of these species that do not have gushing blood is found on your clothes, or your clothes is made with a part of these animals,
mm-hmm.
then your prayer is valid and you don't have to, you know, change your clothes, you don't have to wash it, or you don't have to remove it.
Right.
Yes. Supreme Leader Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that the precaution is to remove that that part or that piece from the animal that does not have the gushing blood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better not to wear your prayers with that part of a dead animal that does not have gushing blood.
Blood, I see.
It's more precautionary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Escalating tensions between Moscow and Western countries, namely the United States, in recent months have prompted security talks over issues straining bilateral relations. Russian and American diplomats meet for talks in the Swiss city of Geneva. The talks are aimed at a wide-ranging new security arrangement between Russia and the West. The Kremlin demands guarantees that NATO will not expand further eastward by granting membership to ex-Soviet Ukraine. The U.S.-led NATO military alliance claims Moscow is building up troops on its border with the intention to attack Ukraine. Moscow denies the allegations, emphasizing that it can move its troops around within its own borders as it sees fit. On the other hand, Russia has long complained about existing U.S. missile defense capabilities based in southern Romania. Also, a second installation in northern Poland is nearly complete and projected to be operational by the end of this year. Moscow has recently voiced concerns that Washington would also seek to base missiles in Ukraine, which could be used for offensive purposes as well.
There was always a threat to Russia. NATO has traditionally, more specifically during the last few years, had a very hostile attitude towards Russia, and therefore they felt justifiably threatened.
The situation prompted Moscow to table a set of security proposals, which included curbs on NATO expansion and security guarantees for Russia. Some of these demands have already been rejected by the U.S. and its allies, as both NATO and Washington have said that the alliance would never promise not to expand. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov held a meeting with his American counterpart, Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman, in Geneva on Sunday. He described the initial talks with Washington on security guarantees as stunning, but also noted that the conversation was difficult. Russia rules out any concession at security talks with the U.S., warning that the talks on the Ukraine crisis might end early. Meanwhile, the U.S. says no breakthroughs are expected and that progress depends on the escalation from Moscow. The Russians are also scheduled to hold similar high-level discussions with NATO and Europeans. In December, Moscow set out its security demands in two documents, a proposed treaty with the U.S. and an agreement with NATO. Essentially, Russia now wants guarantees that NATO will halt its eastward expansion, rule out membership for Ukraine and other former Soviet countries, and roll back its military deployments in Central and Eastern Europe. The U.S. and its NATO allies, meanwhile, have already said they will not accede to Russia's demands. They have already rejected a demand for the removal of all U.S. nuclear weapons stationed in Europe, and also flatly ruled out Moscow's demand for a guarantee that Ukraine and Georgia will never join NATO. Russia considers this expansion as a direct threat to its national security. Also, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance and Russia could still find a political solution for their differences. Stoltenberg reiterated the alliance wasn't ready to discuss guarantees that it won't expand eastward to meet Moscow's demands, saying that would breach NATO's core principles. But he said the U.S. and NATO were prepared to speak about possible risk reduction measures like arms control, on efforts to try to have more transparency on military activity, exercises, and also on lines of communications.
Western forces puts NATO on the border of Russia, and this is what is creating the danger. This is really the only thing that is creating the danger, and to a large extent, Russian actions have been a reaction against the more hostile and the more aggressive policy of NATO in expanding and in meeting the demands of even the smaller countries who are really obsessed with Russia at the cost of agreements and comity between Russia and NATO.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has previously warned that Moscow will act if the U.S.-led NATO military alliance crosses its red lines in Ukraine. Putin said the expansion of NATO military infrastructure in Ukraine was a red line he hoped would not be crossed. Kazakhstan faces its worst violence experienced since the independence of the Central Asian country in the early 1990s as the Soviet Union collapsed. Dozens of people have died while public buildings across the country have been looted and torched over the past week. It all began with fuel reforms that took effect on January 1, 2022, leading to the doubling of liquefied petroleum gas prices.
Simple events, increasing prices for liquid gas, which most people in Kazakhstan using as a fuel for cars and as a fuel for heating the houses, That was a trigger, that kind of event.
Following that, demonstrations began in the western Manjistau province on Sunday, but then spread across the country and turned violent, resulting in clashes between protesters and security forces. Kazakh President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev's response included accepting the resignation of the government and announcing fixed fuel prices, but also ordering a crackdown. The unrest prompted Tokayev to appeal for help from the Collective Security Treaty Organization to restore peace and security. The Collective Security Treaty Organization is a Russian-led alliance of former Soviet states including Russia, Belarus, Tajikistan, Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. Tokayev blames foreign-trained terrorists for the unrest. He describes a large proportion of the protesters as criminals, saying 20,000 bandits were involved in the unrest in Almaty, Kazakhstan's largest city and the center of the recent unrest. Consequently, he has authorized security forces to open fire without warning in case of further unrest. Initial peaceful protests appear to have been subverted by seemingly well-organized groups of rioters, particularly on Wednesday when the police seemed to leave key installations in the city unprotected. The unrest is seen as an attempt by foreign parties to provoke color revolutions in the ex-Soviet country, modeled on the Rose Revolution in Georgia and the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, which Russia has blamed on the West as an attempt to undermine the security of Kazakhstan.
Obviously, some game of the superpower and Western interference and covert operations always exist.
Russia's top envoy in the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, blames Washington's foreign policy for helping to provoke the crisis in Kazakhstan. Antonov says the root cause of the mayhem is the destabilization in the Middle East and Afghanistan, caused in turn by 2 decades of U.S. military intervention across Western and Central Asia under the pretext of defending human rights and democracy. Russia says the reason behind its decision to provide military support for Kazakhstan is reaffirming its commitment to allied obligations within the Collective Security Treaty Organization. In addition, Moscow views the recent developments in Kazakhstan as externally provoked attempts at disrupting the security and integrity of the state through violent means, including trained and organized armed groups. Russia also slammed U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken as boorish for saying Kazakhstan would be settled with Russian presence after asking Moscow to send in troops. This came after Blinken told reporters on Friday
that I think one lesson of recent history is that once Russians are in your house, it's sometimes very difficult to get them to leave.
Moscow ramped up the criticism further, also going on to cite a number of Washington's invasions, interventions, and military occupations over the decades, suggesting Blinken might learn a history lesson of his own. It mentioned unfortunate people who had the bad luck to see these uninvited guests at their doorstep, naming Native Americans, Koreans, Vietnamese, and Syrians, among others.
But Russia has much better track record than United States, because United States has about 800 military objects and bases around the globe, and staying unwelcome in a lot of countries.
Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Kazakh counterpart, Kasym-Jomart Tokayev, held a phone conversation to discuss the ongoing unrest in Kazakhstan on Saturday. The two discussed steps to restore order in the country. Tokayev also informed Putin in detail about the situation in the country, noting that it is developing towards a stabilization.
On January 3, 2020, the United States assassinated Iran's Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani alongside the deputy commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Unit, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, in a drone strike at the Baghdad airport.
When American democracy is a complete sham, as it was under Trump, and it reached its apotheosis, you could say, with the assassination of a great anti-ISIS fighter, really the main force that was fighting ISIS.
5 days later, Iran launched a barrage of ballistic missiles at Iraq's Ain al-Assad airbase housing U.S. troops in retaliation for the assassination, leaving scores of casualties. The Pentagon downplayed the number of troops injured in the strike, but later admitted that over 100 of its personnel suffered traumatic brain injuries. One died by suicide in October.
See, this, I think this is probably what Pompeo and Trump were counting on. They thought, oh, well, we'll kill this Soleimani, and then maybe Iran will attack us, and that will give us an excuse to go to war against Iran. I'm sure that was their plan, but you didn't do that. That was it's very wise. When you're dealing with an enraged bull, you don't poke it. You go around it. You figure out where its weak spots are. You do that kind of strategizing.
This is what the head of the United States Central Command has told a New Yorker journalist about the airstrike on Ain al-Assad Air Base.
They hit pretty much where they wanted to hit. They can strike effectively across the breadth and the depth of the Middle East. They could strike with accuracy, and they could strike with volume.
The American general has admitted that Iran's missile capabilities have given the Islamic Republic overmatch, a military term meaning a level of military prowess where the country can overwhelm the enemy by a significant margin. Last August, the Taliban swept to power in Afghanistan in a matter of weeks and seized control of the capital, Kabul, while the U.S. troops were still present in the country. Observers believe the United States' withdrawal from the Central Asian country will go down in history as one of the most chaotic moves Washington has ever made. But a senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says Americans will have to leave Iraq in a more humiliating manner than the way they left Afghanistan. The commander of the IRGC's Quds Force said the Americans are facing various problems in the region while a resistance front is advancing on a daily basis. Brigadier General Ismail Ghani noted that the resistance fighters are now equipped with missiles and weapons that can target U.S. warships anywhere in the region. The senior commander said Americans will be finally uprooted from the region. He made the remarks at a ceremony in the Iranian city of Mashhad on the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis.
I don't know. You ask if the U.S. has got the message. Well, sometimes people or nations are so foolish that they go to such a point with their mistaken agenda that it just collapses completely. So that seems to be what's going to happen. I don't know when it will happen, but there seems to be very little possibility of a rational U.S. government.
Despite the United States and its allies' repeated threats, Iran has proven its ability to make good on its promise to mete out a crushing response to any possible aggressor.
Just days into 2022, North Korea carried out a major weapons test. It launched a hypersonic missile this week, with North Korean media saying the projectile precisely hit its target at a distance of 700 kilometers. This was North Korea's second test of a hypersonic missile. Unlike ballistic missiles that fly up into outer space before returning to hit their targets with a somehow predictable trajectory, hypersonic weapons fly at lower altitudes and can achieve more than 5 times the speed of sound. Analysts say, however, the main feature of hypersonic weapons is not their speed, but their maneuverability makes them much harder to detect by radar. The North is currently part of a small group of countries, including the United States and China, in trying to develop hypersonic military technologies.
They have a plan. They have a plan that is public, is available, public, is not, there is no secret, is available. So they have several devices, several weapon range that they want to develop. And one category is the hypersonic one.
The latest test firing came days after North's leader Kim Jong-un pledged once again to boost Pyongyang's defenses. He said in a New Year's speech that Pyongyang would continue to strengthen its capabilities because the Korean Peninsula still faces an increasingly unstable military environment. North Korea tested different projectiles last year amid stalled talks with the United States and its southern neighbor, Under former U.S. President Donald Trump, America and North Korea came close to a conflict before a series of meetings between the two adversaries' presidents. The high-profile summits broke down with no agreement, making Trump's approach towards North Korea another one of his major failures. North Korea has been subjected to Western sanctions for decades. Its relationship with the U.S. and its southern neighbors, South Korea and Japan, both staunch American allies, has been fraught with tensions for a very long time. North Korea is grappling with economic sanctions and chronic food shortages. Pyongyang has suffered under sanctions, but it has somehow managed to withstand the American pressure campaign.
They manage to avoid any trouble to their economy in the same way that many other countries that are under sanctions are doing. So basically they readjust their economy in a way that they can survive.
Despite its long list of economic problems, the North has managed to produce several nuclear warheads, describing them as a necessary insurance against an attack by the U.S. The U.S., which has been calling on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons, has left no stone unturned to isolate the communist state. But successive U.S. administrations have failed to force North Korea into submission. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration now says it is open to talks, but the North says that's implausible given the record of American hostile policies. The North seems too weary of American ulterior motives. What if it abandons its atomic arms and the U.S. does not drop its hostile policies and keeps up the pressure? This must be one of the key questions that comes to the North Korean leader's mind when he focuses on his country's relationship with America. The North insists that the White House has been determined to take and reluctant to give during past talks. It remains to be seen how Biden will act now to try to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
South Koreans enjoy a wildlife refuge near the Korean Demilitarized Zone. New tours opened in November from the DMZ Crane Peace Town. Frank Smith has more in this report.
A new hiking trail and birdwatching facility opened up in South Korea this past November. DMZ Crane Peace Town created special birding cabins and guides wilderness hikes north of the 38th parallel, near the DMZ, the fortified border with North Korea. The demilitarized zone was created with the armistice that ended the Korean War back in 1953. Guard post fencing and a 2 to 4 kilometer wide buffer zone now separate North Korea and South Korea, with that no man's land becoming home to rejuvenated plant and wildlife. Local officials see wildlife tourism as an opportunity to promote inter-Korean peace.
Cranes know no borders. That's why we're promoting the crane as a symbol of peace, as they can freely come and go between North and South Korea.
Each winter, several species of birds, especially cranes, spend time to rest and feed in the area, where there's little development and few people. Officials say more birds have been coming here because of depleted feeding grounds in the north.
Shirwan has wide plains suitable for growing rice. Cranes eat the grain that has fallen after harvest, and it's the best place for cranes because it's located north of the civilian control line.
A safe vantage point to photograph the wildlife is provided at the Hantan River near Yangji Village, attracting birders from far afield.
I left home at 4 in the morning to come here to photograph wild birds, swans and cranes. It's good because there are many mallard ducks and other birds. They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, Cheerwon County, South Korea.
Thirty-three lucky green sea turtles get a new lease on life in Indonesia. The turtles were released into the sea off the coast of the island of Bali. Tourists and locals gathered to watch the endangered animals get their way back to the wild. Authorities rescued the reptiles from poachers late last year. The population of green sea turtles has fell sharply in recent years due to excessive hunting and the loss of nesting sites. In Chile, three Andean condors are back in the wild after years of rehab at a rescue center. The vulnerable vultures were released near the Chilean capital, Santiago. Scientists will continue to monitor the birds to make sure they are healthy. Andean condors occupy a special place in Chile. They are, in fact, the country's national bird and a symbol of power and health. The vultures are one of the biggest flight-capable birds in the world, with a wingspan of up to 3.2 meters. Conservationists in several countries are trying to shore up their population.
In Germany, tasty bits of crumbs are all it takes for hundreds of sheep and goats to participate in the campaign to encourage vaccination against COVID-19. 700 farm animals were arranged into a 100-meter-long syringe in a pasture south of Hamburg. The shepherd says she spent several days practicing the herd. The sheep and goats were lured by pieces of bread, which they quickly gobbled up after being released into the field. Helping the shepherd was an organizer who works with a flock to run team training exercises for companies. He says they wanted to do something to grab people's attention and encourage them to get COVID jabs.
Well, if I were to just write it on Facebook, nobody would notice it. And my job is to have company teams leading some thousand sheep from A to B, and I have noticed how enthusiastically the sheep are received, and that it simply reaches people deep inside, which is perhaps not possible rationally, with rational arguments.
Etzold says sheep bring out the soft side of people and hopes that this will help convey the message. So far, the campaign has received a positive response, with videos of the sheep arrangements going viral. Official data shows Germany has the lowest inoculation rate among Western European nations. This is mainly attributed to vaccination hesitancy, as well as a small percentage who vehemently oppose getting the jab. Technological change is accelerating today, with robots and artificial intelligence making fast inroads into human lives. A consumer electronics show in Las Vegas is the latest example of the same. From lifelike baby dolls to full-grown human-like robots are on the display. They not only write, cry, laugh, and blink, but some of them speak and react when you tell them something. The most interesting thing about these robots is their reactions, which are just like humans, seeming as if they are real people. The robot makers say soon people will not be scared of these human-faced machines being among them.
Humans are so complex, so making a robot exactly like a human is almost impossible. If we did that, then you wouldn't be scared of it, because you'd just assume it's a human. But you get that uncanny valley just before, where it doesn't quite move like a human, doesn't quite express itself or emote or talk like a human. And that's the uncanny valley. That's the scary bit. If you go further back to something that looks less like a human, then suddenly you like it a lot more.
The robot makers hope that the way these robots are made would help even doctors how to treat and confront children, for instance. They also hope that by adding more human characteristics to these robots, the machines will be at the service of humans more than before.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Let's see what's happening in one of the world's oldest festivals. It's called Black and White Carnival, celebrated every year in the Colombian city of Pasto. But it has a lot more than what its name may suggest. The carnival, full of vibrant colors and fun, livens up when people perform music too. Those in attendance even threw talcum powder and foam to add more doses of joy. More things to visit too. Colorful monuments and floats are brought to the streets. An artisan explains what's behind one of the huge sculptures exhibited there.
This commemorates what we are going through right now in the world, the virus, that little thing that brought COVID. We have skulls, people who died, those who are reborn, children, old people, and a lady. That's the whole motif. It's called rebirth.
The event has roots in Spanish and African traditions related to the indigenous people of Colombia. The carnival is aimed at highlighting the diversity of ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Its name symbolizes unity and equality. The festival continues until January the 10th. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in a Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats. Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remain true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and passed the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
A
A mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
Definitely, we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now they're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come, and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmagh for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games, and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. 5 horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was -6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since.
IRIB English Radio.